Astrology Chalet. Today is the 20th of January, 2024. It is the last day of doing somewhere in between readings. I'm doing the 23rd and 24th of them today. I feel a little like it is the Monday morning at the Woodstock Festival, and the last shows from Sunday night have been held over to Monday morning, and the first act up is going to be Sha-na-na. I guess that's going to be Libra, and then ending the show will be the Aquarius 2024 video reading. I'm Eric Francis, happy to be back with you on a spectacular cold, sunny winter morning here in the Hudson Valley of New York State. I've been doing a lot of astrology readings lately, and let's see what I've got for you. There's a lot in the Libra written reading, more than I imagined I could ever get into an astrology reading, but there it is. I have not reread that reading, so this is a de novo look at your chart. I'm just going to basically sum up what I see happening there, and probably emphasize different things than I did in the written reading. For those of you who are wondering how to reconcile your sun sign and your rising sign readings, I would not worry too much about the technicalities of the astrology. Ultimately, it's the thing I say and not the reasoning process that I use to get there that matters the most. And so if you're wondering about the astrological rationalization, that's a challenge of reading and learning how to read. And often astrologers will be confronted with charts that seem to offer different viewpoints, but often when you actually start to interpret, you find out that they're saying very similar things, and so it's really not that mysterious. But I would just suggest not getting too caught up in the technicalities of the houses, and remember that astrology is a divination art. It is based on pattern recognition and synchronicity far more than it's based on specific rules. A lot of the planets I'm going to read, there's nothing in the way of pre-existing rules to read them. So it's I wouldn't say that I'm making it up as I go along, but that's what all writing is ultimately, right? You stick to the facts. That's one thing. So the facts are in the chart. So apropos of that, what I am reading in this reading is your solar chart. It's the chart for the sign and not the person. If you happen to be Libra rising, then it's the same basic concept, only I'm not using house cusps, and I'm counting the end of the sign as the end of the house, and that is the oldest method of reading astrology. So that's an old thing. There's a book floating around on Planet Waves. You can write to me if you want a copy of it. It's called Whole Sign Houses by Rob Hand. But in any event, really what I'm doing is just riffing off of the ideas presented by the chart more than I am laying down any laws, rules, guidelines, or regulations. So that's my elevator pitch for what I'm doing. I'm not so sure that I did a good reading of the 10th house in the Libra reading of Cancer. So let's do the angular houses, mainly the cardinal signs, and then see where we go from there. There's certainly plenty going on the cardinal signs, plenty going on the air signs. But anyway, Libra is currently defined by a deep space point. The deep space point is a massive galaxy called Messier 87, M87, and it's currently at 1.5 degrees of Libra. Tracy Delaney has upgraded that position in the Serenu ephemeris to She's calling this the I believe either the local group or the Virgo cluster. She's defining it as a group of galaxies that concentrate in that point. And in any event, that's a lot of energy to begin such a seemingly mellow sign like Libra with. To have whether you think of it as a group of galaxies or the biggest known galaxy anywhere near here, Phil Sedgwick calls it the supergalactic center. And what it does is it adds intensity to Libra of a kind that was undreamed of in the old astrology books, where Libra was said to be, you know, about balance and indecisive and all these things, and without too much in the way of like a gritty interpretation of what this sign is about. A lot of things are forgotten about Libra. The fact that Saturn is exalted in Libra is all but forgotten by contemporary astrologers, so far as I know. I don't read that much astrology, but the exaltations are really important, and Saturn is a very important commentary on the nature of Libra, because it talks about the disciplined nature of Libran energy, which is what leads to the ability to do the kind of creative things that you are capable of doing, that require long-term commitment and that require the full application of your mind, and that require more than just the appreciation of beauty. To express beauty takes, it takes breaking a sweat. It can take turning yourself into a little bit of sand and glue, and smoothing out that which you are expressing. So with that in mind, my point is that Libra is not what you were told, and it's not what we were told. But it is a vitally important energy of the 12, because it does represent the principle of balance. It represents the principle of aesthetics. There's a justice principle involved in Libra. And of course, Libra is relational. There would be no concept of one-on-one relationships, particularly between men and women, without Libra being in the picture. So we have that, and you have that. One of the most important, well, let's fuck important. One of my favorite placements of a minor planet going on these days is that a slow mover called Logos is moving through Libra. Logos is a deep concept. Everyone's had a go at trying to define Logos, and ultimately I think of Logos as the expression of ideas as the word in a way that is communicable, the expression of something in a way that is relatable to other people. And it is the root of many words, including astrology itself, and of logic. And I think of Logos as the ability to make sense to someone besides yourself. And the ability to make sense is what defines us as not being crazy people. If we can relate our experience, and we can relate our ideas in a way that others can follow and develop, that is the expression of sanity. And where Logos appears in one's chart, it's always going to be where Libra is right now, is I'm saying this is the place where we need to find the language. And not Adrian Rich Libra, Adrian Rich's dream of a common language, but the reality of a common language, and the reality of working toward an understanding that we can express in words to one another and respond to one another in a way that makes sense. And so this is the dominant energetic quality expressing itself through Libra. There's not much in the way of traditional planets. They'll come and go through the year, but as far as what's influencing and defining Libra right now, it is this, I would describe it as a need to be understood. And the burden of communication is on the speaker, the burden of creating the words that others might understand, that is on the thinker and on the speaker. So that is you. So I would say take your time in putting your thoughts and your ideas together in a way that can be related to by other people, and where an actual dialogue can ensue. And of course, there's not a very high priority on dialogues these days. So it seems like hardly anybody cares whether they're actually understood. It seems to be life communication these days seems to be all about the emotional reaction. And, you know, with M87 so powerful in your chart all the time, like lifetime thing, not going anywhere, people react to you and they respond to you emotionally, but I don't think that's what you want. I think what you want is to be understood. So you have to work for that. The question is whether you feel that way, though. Here's your solar chart. We've got this is there's a copy of this with your written reading, and so I've just introduced the concept of what's in Libra right now, and that's Logos in Libra. I'm going to jump across the dial to the seventh house. The first and the seventh houses function as one system, and need to be read together. The seventh is your relationship house, and the seventh is what you generally encounter in the environment when you're just walking around on the street or just going about normal daily business. It's your sense of the tone of the world. And you like high initiative people. Having Aries there, this is the thing that Aries is all about. Aries is initiative in astrology. There's nothing subtle about that. It turns the key to the universe. And while you may not be a passive person, it does help to have other people around you who are high initiative people. Now, there are several challenges coming in through Aries right now, and one of them that you may have recognized is that the idea that you depend on the presence of high initiative people also implies that they have a sense of who they are. It can be really confusing when people have a lot of initiative, but are clueless about who they are. And one of the issues coming in by way of Aries archetypally in our times is that many, many people are highly destabilized by the digital environment. The telephone was bad enough, electricity was challenging enough, the radio coming in denuded most people of their individuality and turned them into tribal beings. TV continued to push the tribalism, and then everyone became a TV director, an actor in their own TV show. That became the central metaphor for living. And under digital conditions, that fiction has been completely undermined now to where most people don't necessarily realize it, but their sense of cluelessness, if they tuned into it about who they are, would be kind of exponential to where it was in previous decades. And that's because there is so little that we can align with, whether internally or externally, and all of this technology that we're surrounded by is highly destabilizing. And so it may be that one of the things that you look for in the world, which is people with high initiative who have a sense of who they are, which is really one of the most comfortable environments for you to be in, is people who are very confident in themselves and self-assured. I think that you find them inspiring. You're able to pick up on their energy and in a way present them in a more appealing way. But it's become very difficult to find anybody who has a grounded sense of who they are. And this problem, this condition, has found a kind of a counterpart in Chiron in Aries. Now, Chiron has been in your opposite sign, Aries, since 2018-2019, and it has been responsible for a level of a crisis in your relationships, possibly something of an existential crisis with experience itself, a sense of the previous organization structures of your relationship being up for a high scrutiny review. That's one of the things that Chiron does the best, is a scrupulous review of what's going on, which can involve a lot of documentation and a quest for wholeness. So Aries taking Chiron for a long transit, it's a couple of more years, really. It's two, three more years of Chiron and Aries process. It comes to a peak this year, though. But the presence of Chiron in your seventh can represent a lot of different things and a lot of different kinds of people. But in particular, there's likely to be a teacher who's shown up. There's likely to be a teacher in the form of a mentor, really. And the other thing with Chiron in your opposite sign is you're likely to be picking up the presence of a good few people who have some serious problems. So it's not just teachers, though Chiron is profoundly about teachers, but Chiron can also show up in the form of those who are wounded and who need attention, and then they find a kind of a refuge in you. And this can be a lot of work. It can also be that relational partners have revealed a level of urgency of their situation, or their crisis has, their personal private life crisis having nothing to do with you, has boiled up to the surface and made itself apparent. You've got to decide what to do. And it's also about people who are just very different and feel like misfits. And often those who go through life feeling like misfits, who don't have the ability to blend in that you have. I mean, Libra has an exceptional gift for blending in, for being part of the scenery, for being able to work below the radar, and then when the moment is right, you reveal your true power, your true colors. A lot of people don't have that ability. They are more like a raw nerve, or more like someone who just might bring controversy with them wherever they go, and it does not in any way mean that they are any form of an unworthy person, but rather that they just are, they are adapted differently. They may be brutally sincere in ways, and you seem to catch a good few of these and have to do a lot of smoothing over. And as my old editor at Kaner, Dave Nick, used to say, be a tying up the loose ends Libra. The Aries in Chiron and Aries experience now has gone on for about 6 years. That's quite a while. But despite the fact that it's not a new transit, like a number of different things in astrology this year, it reaches a very fast peak of intensity that it's never quite attained before. And that happens in April. What I didn't say was, 19 minutes in, is that I'm recording with the Sun in Aquarius, but with the Moon still, sorry, with Pluto, sorry, it's been a lot of readings, Pluto in the last arc minute of Capricorn. So we're right in this moment of transition right now, though we have the quality of the air sign sun to help, hopefully help. I need a lot of help right now to facilitate this reading. Let me finish up Aries, and then because that's really a major point of integration for you because of that opposite sign thing. So the Chiron's been in Aries for a while, but it reaches this peak of intensity due to the total solar eclipse that happens on April 8th. The total solar eclipse is part of a number of different events, including today's ingress of Pluto into Aquarius and others that come after it. For example, April 20th, the Uranus-Neptune Jupiter conjunction. But that eclipse in your opposite sign is likely to be a kind of a watershed moment for the world, and particularly for you in your relationships. And I think that when you take the lineup is that there is a total solar eclipse in your relationship house, which is impressive enough as it is, but that total solar eclipse is conjunct Chiron to the degree, and that is read as a peak of Chiron energy. But there's also something else. When an eclipse is that direct, i.e. you're looking right at it, right? You're looking at it. Here is Libra, and then you look out at, it's almost like you stand on this dark line and you look out at this region of the chart. And this is like the kind of radar where you pick up your relationships. You see what is on the horizon, right? This is very much the horizon, and you're usually looking toward the west. That's the metaphor in astrology, is looking toward the west, toward the direction of the setting sun. And this is the house where the most tangible activity in a chart can be read. And Chiron has been there, so I've described some of those principles, but what the eclipse is talking about is the peeling back of a layer of something that is obscuring the action of Chiron, because eclipses always in some way act like a curtain parting or a veil being pulled back. And so there are likely to be discoveries you make not only about relationships that you're in, but about your entire concept of relationships and how the people in your life have played into your concept of relationships. And then the eclipse represents a radical and potentially quite complete transformation of something, a point of no return, a thing that you approach where you can't really go back, because that's just how eclipses are. They are the one of the main enforcers of momentum, movement, forward process in astrology. And so I think that whatever may develop in your relationships generally, or in an important personal relationship, that you see it in the largest possible context of your total journey of relationships. Something about this eclipse is going to shift your orientation in the world and remind you of where you stand with yourself as apart from where you stand with others in relationships. That's one of the biggest lessons of Libra, is to not base your idea of where you stand with you on where you seem to stand with other people. Other people are highly unstable. They have their own karma. They have their own trip. And a lot of the things that they do and say, and their needs and their desires are not directly about you. You happen to be there, and you may have an opportunity to help them fulfill some of that. You may have an opportunity to assist. And then there's the deeper question of what you're doing in the relationship. And I would say that with any relationship, in your life or that comes into your life, what you're doing there is a very high focus question of Chiron in Aries and the eclipse in Aries. Now, I was referencing this earlier, which is the struggle to find people who you can relate to as solid individuals who are able to, in a sense, provide some consistent leadership and initiative. And one of the, based on self-knowledge, and one of the challenges, it's kind of quite a serious problem, actually, one of the challenges that we are living with in the world right now is the deterioration of people's interior sense of being by digital conditions. And you have been in a position to witness this, partly because you are such a relationally oriented person. You are tracking the subtle and not so subtle changes in relationships, both as a participant and as a kind of an objective witness. And I would encourage you to consider the fact that your perceptions are something larger than a simply subjective single point of view opinion about the world, which they are in one sense, but I think that you're picking up something that is much more significant, and that you may have one of the best senses of the story arc of how this has developed, particularly over the past 20-25 years, the digital has really taken hold. And so as people's idea of what it means to be a person change, your experience of them as a person changes, because they're in effect someone different. And this is a source of destabilization for you, but it's also something that you're probably able to adapt to. And part of the adaptation has come from having Chiron. I mean, Chiron's not always easy, but Chiron always provides you with utilities you need to get whatever it is that you need to get done. Chiron will never leave you without the resources that you need to make the kind of adjustments that you're being called to make. And so Chiron's presence has provided a source of whole seeking, a source of, I don't want to use the word energy. It's not really an energy. It is much more tangible than that kind of new agey concept. Healing tools, basically, to work with in this somewhat exaggerated state of people coming to you with exaggerated personal needs. And if you haven't noticed this happening so far, you know, pay attention as the pressure of the eclipse builds, and you see that there's a lot of people who are not handling it as well as you are. And if you think that no one's really noticing what's going on in the world, but you're seeing something that other people don't seem to be noticing, I would consider the fact that you just have a better seat at the show, and you're also more often drawn in to participate rather than just to observe. All right. There's one other factor in this eclipse, and I think that's going to give you a sense of who you can relate to, is that at the moment, and we're going to hear a lot about this eclipse because it crosses the United States, and it's in Aries, and it's going to get a lot of attention in astrology, and I'm not sure who's going to be tracking the fact that it's conjunct Chiron. I mean, somebody will be. But at the moment of this eclipse, retrograde Mercury, which I've just drawn into this chart, is going to be exactly conjunct Eris. And my The retrograde Mercury is a introspective key. It is something that facilitates a review of what has happened in the past, and it's also about a kind of a retrieval, soul retrieval. I think when particularly Mercury or Venus or something is retrograde and it's conjunct a powerful planet, there's an element of soul retrieval to that. And my hunch is that you are going to be encountering many people with many in many different conditions, but there's going to be one, maybe two, who has a very distinct sense of their interior being, and this is what's going to remind you of what you have been missing. And I would say that the best people for you to associate with and to try to develop your relationships with are going to be the ones who are distinctly aware of their inner being and who can communicate with you something about their inner state. And that relates to your logos, right? Your logos in Libra is always looking for people with whom you can have a conversation. But you will not really know for a little while, 2, 3, 4 conversations, because there are certain things that it's easy to fake early on. So when you meet someone you can talk to, do what you can to continue that dialogue and sort out how it is they're relating to what is likely to be a far more intense inner quality than they're revealing. It may be that their silence says more than their words. It may be that they're only giving you a small clue as to their situation. You are the one with the greater gift for words. And what I suggest you do is draw people out of themselves a little bit to the point where you can start to assemble the things that they're saying into the larger whole that they are describing. So this is a lot of growth and a lot of learning in relationships. It shows up in your eighth house also. I don't want to get there quite yet. But in the subsequent relationship house, there is another evocative meeting that happens. That's Taurus, 150 degrees away from Libra. And that is suggesting, just to touch on it briefly, that is suggesting that through these relational experiences, where you can get in contact with people's inner being, something very productive can emerge from that. And you may not be able to even prove the relationship between the two. It may be that you make a certain kind of human contact that has not been forthcoming in a long time, right? We're all living in this kind of paucity of human contact right now, and this kind of there are days where it feels like the oxygen is running out, particularly in the digital realm, around the lack of introspection going on. And so the introspection may seem to come from one place, and then the radical developments, progress, and changes, offers of some kind come from another place. But never forget there's a relationship. And maybe we'll come back to that. I want to look at houses 4 and 10, which are also angular houses for you. I want to just complete the cardinal cross. The cardinal cross is Libra, Aries, Cancer, Capricorn. And these signs all work together as one thing called triplicity. That's cardinal, fixed, or mutable. It's 3, triplicity. You're on the cardinal triplicity, the one that begins initiative. The beginning of seasons, for example, is a thing that takes place in the cardinal signs always. So all the cardinal signs are very important to you, and any time where when a season changes, note that that's where you have access to the most the most abundant mojo is right at the time when a season changes. For the past 15 years or so, Pluto has been going through your fourth house. And as I said in the written reading, Libra likes to build its dwelling on a solid foundation. And we see that solid foundation indicated by Capricorn. And the problem with that is that over the past 30 years, and particularly the past 15 years of Pluto and Capricorn, that that foundation has been undermined. And it's required you to dig an even deeper foundation. I mean, it's kind of like if you drill a well at 40 feet and the one at 40 feet dries out, then you might have to go down 120 feet and drill a new well and find new water. And so if you could translate that metaphor to a foundation, you were born with the gift, the ability to stand on a certain foundation. But that foundation is no longer there, and most of where it's gone, it has gone in the past 15 years. And fortunately, that's long enough that you have been able to cultivate your own sense of solidity below that, and have been able to find grounding, confidence, and security in yourself in a way that that you never have before. And this is very important in the world. And the idea that you can stand on a foundation that you trust has always been one of the secrets of your success. There has to be some inherent trust in the world to be able to do anything productive in the world. You cannot just constantly be confronted, by a sense of missing trust or missing potential. And so I would encourage you to keep working on whatever you consider to be your foundation, and that being the foundation of your true underlying security and sense of belonging and sense of having a place in the world that is really yours. The 10th place of Libra is the sign Cancer. So if we start in Libra and follow around, first house, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, 10th. 10th place, can you see all that? Sorry. First, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, 10th. The 10th house is the place of action. It's usually considered the career house. It's usually considered what you're known for. I take a more action-oriented and less reputation-oriented approach to the 10th. The modern tendency of the 10th is to take it as a thing associated mostly with reputation, we're being killed in public relations right now, and I wonder whether there isn't much thing left of a reputation in the world. So the idea of action is much more important, and there has been the process of Pluto going through Capricorn has been humbling in the sense that you have constantly been thrown back on your own emotional resources, of course aided and abetted by all kinds of conditions and relationships not lending themselves that well to having total confidence in them. So what that has meant is you have had to find your own deep inner confidence. And as you've done that, what you've done in this region below the chart has expressed itself above the chart. There's the below, that's Capricorn. Then there's the above, that's Cancer. And just check the chart on the written reading. And you've really had to stabilize your goals. You've had to honor the fact that unless you're taking action that is carrying action, there's no point to doing it. People have a lot of motivations for why they get up and go to work every day. Most people get up and go to work every day so they can bring home a paycheck. That will never work for you. You need to take action on the basis of, and on the very grounds of, the moral grounds of acting out of care. This is the sign Cancer. It must lead the brood. It must be responsible for a family. Whatever family that is, you might work in the ambulance corps, that becomes your family, particularly at work. Whatever you do at work and whoever you work with, there must be a familial quality to that. And over the years of having your confidence undermined, your sense of security undermined by Pluto, and having to go back in there and then find and retrieve your own confidence over and over again, you have built authority. And it may not be easy for you to recognize that you have done this. It may be that people perceive you in a very different way than you perceive yourself. And one of the ways that people perceive you is having a grip and being genuinely authoritative in a quiet, confident way. Not in the blustery bravado way that we see so often, but rather in a way that is subtle when necessary, that leads through example more than leading through words. And the example set is the idea of caring for people. There's also a commitment to excellence that you have invested in. Now, Libra is very good at this. I mean, really, there's a lot of signs that are said to be self-critical. I think that with Libra's emphasis both on discipline through Saturn and beauty through Venus and value through Venus and durability through Saturn, the only way to really make all that work is to excel at what you do. So that's what I'm talking about is the property of this point circled in orange now, called Kronos, in Cancer. It's been there about 20 years, but everything now is rising to manifestation and coming to a peak now. For example, the eclipse is going to be exactly square that point. And so there is a lot in your chart about not only holding yourself to a high standard, but there are likely to be a series of situations where you have to hold someone else to a standard. This is uncomfortable. People do not generally like this kind of confrontation. I don't think you particularly like this kind of confrontation. However, it is likely to be a necessity of leadership, and I suggest that if you're in a position where you have to hold someone to their own rules, that you find a way to do that in your diplomatic way. And the emphasis is on holding people to their rules, not to your rules, right? For example, if a court is adjudicating a case involving the conduct of a corporation, the first place they're going to look is the corporate charter to make sure that the conversation, the challenge, whatever, is compliant with the corporate charter, and then that may be held up in contrast with the larger law. So the first place you're going to start is the person following their own ethics in some way. Of course, to do this, you have to be an impeccably ethical person. You can't leave any room for being called out as a hypocrite in any way. Okay. This house gets activated, and I've been woefully negligent in describing these two transits through these somewhere in between readings because there's been so much else to do. But because the 10th is the house of action, praxis from Greek, P-R-A-X-I-S, praxis, it is significant that there are two new additions to this house this year. And those are Chaos, the Greek proto-goddess, and Asbolus, the fourth centaur. These are not asteroids. These are much more influential than asteroids. They're also not something that really anybody talks about very much. If you go on the obscure centaur astrology forums, you'll hear a lot of people talking about it. I don't know if they even do readings. But these are highly active points. And the presence of Kronos through your 10th house of action has not necessarily expressed itself in a very tangible way, except for your understanding that to be taken seriously, you have to be impeccable. I can't see Kronos in Cancer in the 10th really overreaching that much. I mean, there may have been examples of times when you overreach with your authority, but I'm not reading that in this. I'm reading it as a quiet accumulation of something that you may not have even noticed that you were accumulating. And that something has been not only a degree of acting in accord with your principles, but being recognized as such. But it is a somewhat cool influence, Kronos. It doesn't have a body. It's a planet without a body, but it's very influential. What is going to heat up the activity of this house is the fact that a centaur planet is entering this house. That is Asbolus. And Asbolus is a rarely talked about, very early discovered centaur, I think 1994. And the word Asbolus means carbon dust. To me, the concept of carbon dust is evocative of that which all life has in common. And what all life has in common, as we know it, is carbon. We're more or less carbon-based life on this planet. Trees and people and bodies and the wood. But then that idea expands to all else that life has in common. And one of the other things that life has in common is the desire to keep going, the desire to remain in motion, the desire to remain alive, the desire, the need, the instinct to survive. And this is, I think, going to be a very beneficial, let's say, addition to your portfolio of resources that are available not merely in theory, but in much more practical terms. And at the same time, there's a point beyond Pluto, about a 300-year orbit called Chaos. That's in the classical Kuiper object group, not the Plutino group. So the Plutinos are all hovering around 250-year orbit. The classical Kuiper objects are out at about 300-year orbits. Chaos is one of them. They're all named for gods and goddesses of creation. And Chaos is a goddess of creation. Chaos is the one of the primal Greek creation gods. Chaos is not the chaos in the sense of pandemonium. Chaos in the sense of the goddess Chaos is in the sense of the very fertile matter that will lead itself into creativity if it is worked with in a disciplined way. And so if you start to put all that together, the instinct to persist, I don't like the word survive, but that's in there too. But the instinct to persist is one of the most important things that all life has in common. And particularly as humans, we need to be able to keep going with anything vaguely resembling a good attitude. And the joined by chaos, this is saying work with primal forces, carbon dust being one of them, work with primal forces in service of getting the things done that you need to get done. Many factors are conspiring to say, go deep into what you're doing, deep into your leadership role, deep into your need to guide your life and therefore the lives of the people around you into a pragmatic condition of survival and persistence, particularly when things get weird, which they're going to get in society various different times, in the style of Pluto and Aquarius, seeing many of the changes. It's going to end with Pluto and Aquarius. You are going to be one of the steadfast sources of leadership through example. And I would encourage you to never let that go to your head, but at the same time, to never underplay its importance in your own mind. And to wake up every day and to go forward with a sense that your actions matter. They matter to you. They matter to the people around you. You set an example. And your example is needed. So make it the best possible example. And I'm going a little bit out of order here, doing my best to provide a coherent reading here now in session number 23, including the written ones. Before I talk about Pluto and Aquarius, I want to just get at what's going on in houses 8 and 9. Now, if you go back to the beginning and recall what I said about all the stuff about Chiron and Aries and Eris and Aries and the challenges that you've been facing of encountering people who may leave something to be desired in terms of knowing who they are and coming to you in the process of finding out, the eighth house is an extension of that, but you are in much more solid ground on the eighth house. And part of that is your ability to work with commitment, to work with commitment in a way that is not easy on the planet right now. Dedication, persistence in your relationships, commitment to your contracts and your agreements, and a recognition that it matters whether you come through. It matters. What you do matters. Whether you honor your agreements matters. You know this. It makes a difference. In the pure dharmic sense, meaning to hold the world together. And you are among the people who actually care about the reputation that you have. And you are also someone who is capable of understanding the necessity for certain kinds of resources to be shared resources. rather than the usual thing of hog up as many billions of dollars as it can and then drop dead. I really wonder what people are thinking with this hog up billions of dollars and then drop dead. But it's a very common thing right now. One thing, without going too deep into the astrology, is you're likely to encounter some new abundance of resources this year. They may be financial resources. They may be resources in the form of people showing up. There may be a considerable gain of resources. The question that you must keep asking is, what is the right thing to do with these? If you consider yourself a steward of those resources, what is the approach to stewardship that you want to take? And that does not mean giving it all away. It's not mean keeping it all. It really means making conscious decisions every time there's a decision to be made. And you know, this may take you by surprise. It might not take you by surprise. And I would remind you that in any event, regardless of what you may think or think you know about your situation or how you may feel, there are resources available. You just have to know where to look and where to ask and where to find them. Assuming they don't just land right in your lap, they are there. And so I suggest that you meet every sense of necessity that you may have with a sense, possibly an add-on, maybe it's inherent, innate faith, maybe you're going to take the word that I'm saying. If you have a need, look for who's got the resources. If you need to make some expansion of your business, look for who's got the resources and who shares a common ground of values. The most important thing you can cultivate in relationships of a business nature and of a sexual nature is the common ground of values. The common ground of values means that you notice that a person stands on their principles and they act on their principles. And in a certain way, that's more important than your having the same principles that they do. In fact, if I had to say which was far more important, seeming to share the same principles or meeting someone who adheres to their principles in a structured and disciplined way, the second one would be the more important one. So don't worry so much about whether you agree with the person. You may be the most liberal person in the world. You are much better off connecting with, doing business with, and sharing energy with a conservative who adheres to their principles than you are with a liberal who does not adhere to their principles. Now, I'm using the words liberal and conservative just as examples. But they seem to be meaningful in today's world. And what you want are people around you who are committed to not being hypocrites. And one might say, well, of course I'm not a hypocrite. I believe in the equality of all the races and blah, blah, blah. And we have to spout whatever doctrines and dogmas are going around that week. But that doesn't mean they really do. And on the other hand, if there's a conservative and you listen to what they're saying and their words and ideas and actions align around a genuine honoring of their own life philosophy, whatever that life philosophy is, that's the person to go with. Genuine principles that you may not agree with versus phony principles that you may agree with. And I say this because there are people who are very much opposed to anyone they think doesn't have exactly the same viewpoint that they have. But that is all just trending. That has got nothing to do with reality. And what is not trending is someone's capacity to be true to themselves and to not care so much what other people think. That's a very important quality as well, that people are not making up their minds based on what they think is acceptable in that moment. One of the really interesting changes, I'm not sure how much I did about it in the written reading, involves Sedna changing science in houses. And Sedna has not been in Gemini for 11,400 years. You don't get to say that very often about a planet. Pluto goes around the zodiac something like 40 times. Pluto, which takes 248 years, takes longer than 40 orbits of Pluto to make one orbit of Sedna. That's a long time. So we're about to experience something new with Sedna going into Gemini. Gemini is your house of spiritual activities, spiritual ideas, your relationship to your source, to your higher self, your relationship to knowledge, your relationship to that which exists in other places, times, and cultures. You have Gemini on this house. And Gemini can be wonderfully conversant and likes things to be accessible. But one of the things that Sedna entering Gemini is indicating for you is a spiritual deepening, a necessity to go down below the surface of your own ideas and to understand that ideas are the product of an environment. That which we see and hear and that which people jabber on about is all created by an underlying quality. There's something underneath, and that something is almost never seen or given a name or recognized. But Sedna entering Gemini is going to, especially combined with Pluto entering Aquarius, is going to shift the mental environment in such a way that you will not fail to notice it. Now, I think I'm having a vague recollection of giving a rant in Libra reading, which said something like, your spirituality is something that must be found in tangible relationships with people. That's Gemini on the ninth house. You don't need God. You don't need some abstract concept of God. You may have one. But even no matter how, whatever your notion of God is, it must be that whatever this thing is manifests among the people in human relationships. Relationships with critters too, but within all relationships, as opposed to some highfalutin idea contained in a 6-inch thick book about something about understanding the will of God. Well, for you, the will of God is people leveling with one another, communicating, conducting business, getting things done. Yes, in a loving way. But Gemini is eminently practical. And it's practical on the level of relationships, agape-based, brotherly love-type relationships, neighborly relationships. And it's practical on the use of those relationships to support the village, the town, or the community. We usually support the village, town, or community by trading, by buying and selling. So there's a commerce angle to it, but this is not commerce in the sense of Standard & Poor's, you know, stock rating has been going up since 1980 or some crap like that. This is like people making sure they all have what one another needs. And does not have to be a high profit operation. That's not where this is manifesting in your chart. But my larger message is that that people can have all kinds of concepts of what spiritual is, and hang out in the Zen monastery and do Vipassana for 6 months and sit in a chair and not say anything and eat a bowl of brown rice every day, and the big exciting thing you do is wash the bowl. You don't really need that. That's not ever going to convince you that there is a spiritual force in the human race influencing life on the planet. What will convince you that there's a spiritual force in the human race influencing life on the planet is people cooperating with each other, and this is one of your ministries. Not a bad ministry, right? You don't have to convert the entire country of Zimbabwe to Christian. You only have to hold out a vision for the people around you that they get along, and do something productive. Productive action must lead to a sense of purpose, persistence, endurance, and survival, as Aspolus in the 10th. Okay, one more. We're finally here. Pluto entering Aquarius is another one of many transits in your chart that has this sense of all of us here. But the fifth house, has a distinctly private, well, not really private, but done for its own sake and not for recognition. Done for the sake of pleasure and having fun. Something created because it's cool to create something, rather than something created to impress anyone. And one of the qualities, well, back up one sentence. We are living in times of unprecedented chaos. And a lot of that chaos is coming through a de-individualizing, tribalizing force that is driving people out of their consciousness and their inner awareness. And in so doing, it is creating an extreme of tribalization. Extreme little lynch mobs that rise up. This is cancel culture in all of its different forms, whether it's Black Lives Matter or the Me Too movement or the Flat Earth movement or whatever else is saying, the vaccine movement, flogging people psychologically into accepting that whatever else everybody else thinks is right. In an environment like that, the person who is able to distinguish themselves by asking their own questions and relating to people on their own terms is an artist. It's not your paintbrushes or your box of crayons. Like, anybody can have one of these nifty little boxes of crayons that I use to make my charts. It does not make you an artist. Maybe it makes you a crayon collector, Sharpie pen collector. An artist is a probe. An artist is someone who is willing to experiment by doing something different that gets an unexpected result. This is not appealing to a large portion of the population. People want an expected result. But I would propose that with Pluto going into Aquarius, what you want is the unexpected result. And the unexpected result will, first of all, teach you far more than the expected result. This includes errors also, because there's a lot in the charts right now about the emergent of the new based on errors, based on things that just seem like they didn't go correctly. Chiron has that property. Uranus has that property. Pluto in Aquarius is going to have that property. And so with Pluto going into Aquarius, it's going to challenge the idea that art is what's acceptable, or art is what's painted with paintbrushes, rather than what is respectful of pattern recognition and being a probe. So true creativity is not paint by numbers, but Aquarius can have that quality. Ooh, look, I painted them all perfectly. It must be art. But this is all going to get bollocksed up. And as I said in your written reading, you are one of the, I think of all the signs of Pluto going into Aquarius, to have it going into the fifth is the best. The ninth also, but the ninth is like philosophical and obsessed with ideas. The fifth is obsessed with expression and with experimentation, with tangible, demonstrated experimentation. That does not follow a recipe, or where you break the recipe and get a new result. And so the more you can experiment with going beyond the limit of acceptability that you reach in your mind, right? I mean, doesn't everyone have this? You're working along and you get to the point where you know what you're saying or doing is about to transcend the realm of acceptability. That's when you become a probe. That's when you become an artist. That is when you mentally and physically and very many other ways challenge what is seems to be known, create a kind of a void of the unknown, and then you study what happens. This is real learning. This is a real discovery process. And so we could look at several of these transits as all having the same basic reading: chaos to the 10th, Chiron eclipse, Uranus conjunct Jupiter in the 8th. They all point to something that is potentially unknown, a result that's unknown, and therefore you can't really aspire to it because you don't know what it is. But what you can aspire to is, when the time comes, to do things your own way. And when you get to the point where you think that what you're doing is unacceptable or likely to be considered unacceptable, but it still feels like the right thing, you know you're doing the right thing. You're creating something that is in any way interesting, beautiful, engaging, fulfilling of your curiosity, that's the time to keep going. The art breaks consensus. The artist breaks consensus. The role of the artist is to do what is different and shift the pattern and study the pattern. This is the only way that new things are created, and accidents, but that's all art and science are propelled forward by the happy accident. Many great inventions have happened because someone did something wrong, spilled a beaker, something like that, telephone. And so with the Venus-ruled and Saturn-ruled signs, it can be difficult to get out of the headspace of, what are people going to think about this? How will this be received? But I would say that if you want to take one idea and sort of pull the peg out and throw it in the ocean, that's the one to chuck, because everything about you is venturing into the unknown. And it is in these times, when society seems to be at its most unstable and at its scariest and the very most unpredictable, that the greatest achievements are possible, artistic achievements, the creation of things that serve humanity, experiences that are personally fulfilling to you. And so I suggest that you allow yourself to thrive on the sense of the unknown, the sense of surfing along the cosmic tsunami, wondering where it might lead you, and that your best friends are, in addition to your sense of impeccability, I think, which could translate into being truthful and being sincere, similar idea to truthful, that your best friends are your curiosity and the little sense in your mind that what you're doing is somewhat risky. Curiosity has a marvelously amoral quality. Curiosity is just simply wanting to know for its own sake. And normally that is cauterized, anesthetized, put to sleep by the idea that you must somehow be acceptable to be accepted. You no longer need that. You're on your own. And not to put anybody down here, but most of what passes for something special is no great shakes. And so you don't have to worry about the competition or what other people are doing or what other people think, because what have they got to show for their ideas? I mean, that's nice. I'm glad you have a body shop. I mean, that's a beautiful thing. If I ever need my car painted, I'll bring it in. But the world does a lot of lionizing the ridiculously ordinary and giving people awards for what has already been done 20 times. And not giving so many awards for what's done interestingly once or twice. But the fulfillment, personal fulfillment, and I think fulfillment of your role, your dharma, you're using your natural talent, ability, and awareness to do your part to hold the world together is where you will find the most fulfillment. I am somewhat underselling the incredible developments of 2024 and beyond, and doing what I can to offer you keys to unlocking that potential rather than having high expectations. And so, you know, you want to keep turning that key. And if you've only got one key, if you think you've only got one key, just put it in every door. If the key doesn't work, knock on the door and see who answers. And one of the safest places you can be in life and in the world right now is doing things to find out what happens. Pure experiment. And I'm interested in the results that you get. That is what I have to say to you and for you on this Monday morning after the Woodstock Festival. That was Sha-na-na. That's on the internet, by the way. If you look up Sha-na-na at the Woodstock Festival and marvel at the beauty of that act, there were only two acts on Monday morning, preceding Hendrix, it makes it even better. And it's pretty good without Hendrix being the act that followed. Anyway, have any questions, please bang them into the comment area below. I know I'm a bit fatigued in doing this reading. There's nothing I can do about that. I'm doing my best to let go and let God and to tell you what I see in this lovely little chart of yours. Libra's a good sign to be on this planet. I want you to know that. Libra brings together the best of many things about astrology. And if its shortcoming is the challenge of making up one's mind, then just learn how to make decisions. And learn to love making decisions. And remember that in any evaluation done honestly, there's likely to be something better and something less better. And then you pick which one you want. Okay, that's all for now. Hopefully see you another around the bend at another sign or another time. You know where to find me. Bye for now.